It's great to have all our children back with us this week. Well, that does obviously make it a little noisier, but there's been so many amazing adventures over the summer holidays, the various ones of them in different parts of the state and in far-flung places of the world. But this week it's back to school, or for I think three of them, school for the first time. Jesse? Yes, it is. So three, yeah. So it's a pretty big week, and so I'm going to keep the sermon really short tonight so that we have plenty of time for our back-to-school blessing rite when I finish. And although that rite focuses mainly on school, it also reminds us to think about the role that we as a church community play in the formation of our children. And so as I reflected on the Bible readings that we were to hear tonight, I wondered whether they might shed any light on this formative relationship between the generations of the church. And I think that they do, although it may not be immediately obvious now that you've heard them, but because they didn't mention children anywhere in them. Some Christians are actually very worried about sending their children to school. They see secular schools as godless places intent on leading our children into godless pathways. And so they champion the cause of either Christian schools or in some cases homeschooling as the way to keep our children safe from corrupting influences. But in a funny kind of way, I think the gospel story that we heard tonight might sound a note of caution about separatist approaches to education. You see, Jesus was confronted by a demonized man in a synagogue while he was teaching. And a synagogue is actually a kind of school, a religious center of teaching. And so if we were going to separate ourselves off from the godless world and do our educating in a safe place, this is the kind of place that we would expect to go. But Jesus exposes it as a place where demonic forces can still actively destroy people. And it even seems that the very act of trying to separate ourselves from evil influences in order to keep ourselves holy and pure may be the thing that is giving demons a foothold. Because you see, the man with the unclean spirit, as it's described, is exactly the sort of person who we would try to keep out if we were trying to keep things pure and holy. The whole concept of purity and holiness is usually about separation. Be ye separate, that kind of stuff. Holiness demands separation from whatever is impure. And when the demon sees Jesus, it cries out, "I know who you are, the Holy One of God, the Holy One, the Pure One, the Separate One, Mr. Exclusive." But the one who described himself as having come for the sinners rejects the label and silences the demon and then expels it. Not the man, take note, but the demon. Jesus is able to distinguish between the man and the demonic force that has taken hold of him, and is able to deal with the one without harming or ostracising the other. Now, the most surprising thing about what happens then is that the gathered people respond by expressing amazement at his teaching. And I'm guessing that if some demonic force suddenly manifested itself in here and I successfully completed an exorcism in front of you all, the major talking point out of the service would not be my teaching. Just at a guess. But for Jesus, the content of his teaching and his confrontation with the evil spirit are two sides of the one coin. He was identified as unusually authoritative precisely because of the integrity of word and deed. He practiced what he preached, and he preached what he lived. And if we want to be a really positive influence in the education and formation of our children, or for that matter, of our adult learners, then the teachings that will have impact and take root are those that are backed up by our actions and our lifestyle. So if we talk about loving our neighbours, or even about loving sinners, but what we actually model is distrust, fear, exclusion, and keeping our distance from those we regard as unclean, then unfortunately our example is much more likely to form our children than our words. And we may be falling into exactly the same demonic errors that were infesting the Capernaum synagogue. Now, the Apostle Paul made some closely related points in the reading that we heard from his letter to the church in Corinth. He speaks about knowledge rather than words, but his contrast with actions is quite similar. He's concerned about people whose heads are full of big ideas, which may be perfectly, perfectly true, but who do not act with love, compassion, and concern towards the vulnerable ones around them. Now, Paul doesn't mention children here, but what he actually says about the perils of leading people astray is almost identical with something that Jesus once said, and he used the phrase, these little ones of mine. Paul focuses particularly on issues that may be morally contentious. There are always some things which some people feel are wrong and which other people feel are quite sure that things that they can enjoy without any problem. You can pick your issues. There's always plenty available. And Paul says that just because you have concluded that this or that is no problem for you, that doesn't mean that you should go flaunting your freedom and your superior knowledge in front of those who are feeling a bit more conflicted about it. Because those people watching you are seeing what you do, not what you know about it in your head. And your example may plunge them into confusion and even derail them completely. When knowledge and learning become disconnected from love, they become hazards instead of helps. Now, this is not, it must be noted, this is not about giving narrow-minded legalists the right to dictate what everybody else can do. You know, we all have to conform to the strictest thinking person. We are not being told that we have to avoid upsetting the church's self-appointed moral guardians, because they are actually powerful people who are quite sure of their own rightness. They're not the weak and vulnerable people that the Apostle Paul is talking about. Instead, he's talking about people who are still in the quite early stages of their faith, of finding their way into the faith. And we all begin with fairly simplistic black and white understandings. Regardless of what age you are, when you start learning something new, you first learn about it in very broad brushstrokes, just black and white. That's simply how we learn. But if you trample blithely over some youngster's black and white view of the world, crowing about your rose-coloured view of reality, you may wipe them out before they can learn to see the colours. Our primary focus, says the Apostle, is love for the vulnerable one, not pride in our own supposedly superior knowledge. If it fails the love test, then it's not superior at all. Paul says Jesus gave up his life for this vulnerable person, so the least you can do is give up one or two of your precious entitlements to help them on their journey. Once again, it's not our words or knowledge, but the integrity of how we live and how we relate to others that forms the deepest impressions and contributes most to the way that we shape and guide those who are in our care, whether they be children or whether they be adults. If we exclude or disregard people, either because we see them as unclean or just as immature and inferior, we are not going to be able to contribute anything much of value to their formation. We may actually misform them, or we may simply lose them as soon as they're able to act for themselves and escape from us. But on the other hand, if what they mostly see and experience in us is welcome and love and compassion and generous inclusion, then even if our theology is a bit off the rails at times, they will probably see Christ in us and learn and grow in fairly healthy ways. So this rite that we are about to celebrate with our children is not some cute little pageant to make everybody feel nice. It is a real recognition of the importance of our role in the lives of these children and the place that role has in the call of God on our lives. We've been talking quite a bit lately about new areas of mission, but let's not forget the areas of mission that we already have, one of which is raising up new disciples in our midst, young or old. Our call to welcome others and teach in word and deed all that Jesus has taught us actually begins right here.